Okay. I've got to be honest, I didn't really want to do this video this week. We've had a very busy 3 months on the channel. I've been working a bit too hard. We were just getting ready, if I'm totally honest, to wind things down, and I was hoping to take a little holiday. But obviously, the world's gone totally mad in the last week or so. So, against my better judgment, we are going to do a video on tariffs and Donald Trump. Okay, so the first thing I want to say is usually, well, always, I do this video with these videos with no script. And my philosophy basically is if you really, really understand a thing really well, you don't need a script. You can just come on, explain the thing as clearly as possible, and that will be the best way to educate an audience. So before the videos, I don't write a script. I spend most of my time thinking about and talking about and researching the thing I'm going to discuss in the aim of basically getting the clearest understanding on that thing. And I've spent the last week, as have most economists in the world, talking to people about the Trump tariffs and the absolute madness we've been seeing in the last week, trying to figure it out. And basically, everybody is losing their minds. It's really, really difficult. It's really difficult just to get like unbiased opinions. Everyone is like a lot of people, especially outside America, really, really, really hate Donald Trump and think he's like insane. Some people really, really love him and think he's a genius. There's a lot of discussion as to whether he's even the brains behind this. Is there some kind of massive plan? Is it just like a massive fuck up? And I've been fishing through this as just like everybody else, trying to understand it. I'd be lying to you if I said I have the 100% complete truth on what's happening. But I've been thinking about it a lot. I've been trying my best to understand it. And I think the best thing to do, and what we're going to try to do today, is really slow it down, really unwind it, and just try to explain in as basic possible terms what I think is happening, where I think it's relevant, I'll give other opinions. And what I want to do is use this crazy thing that's happened as an opportunity to unpack some important basic economic concepts, which I think will help you to understand what is happening in the world. So before I do that, I just want to refer back to the video that I did about 10 weeks ago when my book came out, which was also when basically when Trump was inaugurated, called Truth, Lies and Games, where I spoke about how powerful people, and like a really good example of this is Donald Trump, because we could already see it in his first presidency, they say a lot of things and they do a lot of things that are intended to cause effect that may not necessarily be related to what they actually want or what they actually believe. And it can be quite destabilizing as an ordinary person to witness that because you're in a situation where you have these very powerful people who have a lot of power over you saying things and doing things which they very, very quickly turn back on, which it seems that they were maybe never really serious about, which it seems were not really what they were going to do. And you're getting all of these conflicting, disorientating messages. And the first thing to say is, I think it is really phenomenally stressful for a lot of people. And even I myself, who am, quite a rich person and I'm not likely to be severely personally affected by anything that's happening, I found it stressful. The economists that I speak to, who are also mostly quite rich people, comfortable people, have found it stressful. So this has probably been quite stressful for you. And some of the potential consequences of what's happened could be very serious. So one of the reasons why I want to kind of slow it down and try my best to use it to do like a really educational video is because I think it's important to try not to panic, basically. I know it can be difficult when all kinds of things are going on, but if you understand it, I think it's less stressful. So today we're going to try my best to go slowly, explain and educate. This is a decaf, which is hopefully going to keep me going slow. Okay, so let's give a brief summary of what actually happened. So I'm filming this on Thursday, the 10th of April. It's lucky we didn't film this yesterday. And we're going to go out on Sunday, so in 3 days' time. This is a live and moving situation, and it's totally possible that by the time this video comes out, everything's changed. But at this point on Thursday, things do seem to have finally calmed down. Donald Trump has backtracked on the majority of the tariffs. Markets have calmed. So hopefully this will still be live and active and relevant by the time the video comes out. So let's talk a little bit first about the background to this situation. You guys will probably know that in the last week, Trump announced like a kind of insane, massive package of tariffs and then caused an enormous market panic and relatively quickly backtracked on it. But let's talk about the logic behind it, because I think there's some really interesting ideas which are sometimes not clearly unpacked, which can help you understand what's going on. So the first thing you need to understand is what a trade deficit is, because this is a big part of the logic, the theory underpinning the tariffs. Okay, so trade deficits. Really important concept in economics, not too difficult to explain. So say we've got two countries. Here we've got the USA. Here we've got China, but to be honest, I can really put anywhere in Asia, much of the world. Now, the USA and China are both independent economies, both doing their thing, producing goods and services, consuming, investing, but they're also trading with each other. So the USA is selling goods and services to China. From the USA's perspective, these are exports. And China is selling goods and services to the USA. From the USA's perspective, these are imports. It's not a problem. This is the way the world works. But one problem you have here is the USA is a rich country and wages are quite high. If you've ever been to the USA, especially in the last few years, you will see that the USA is expensive. It's much more expensive than really anywhere else in the world at the moment. China is, it's becoming richer, but especially if we talk about other Asian countries, this is a much poorer country. If you go to China or Southeast Asia, prices are lower, wages are lower. And what that means is it's difficult for Asian people to buy a lot of exports from USA because these exports are expensive. Whereas Americans are getting richer and richer. The dollar is quite expensive, especially since COVID. These guys can buy a lot. So the amount going from China to the USA is a lot more than the amount going from USA to China. What you have here is a trade imbalance. And from the USA's perspective, it is a trade deficit. Now, how is this balanced out? How is this possible? The answer is really quite simple. And it's just the same as if I was buying from you more than you were buying from me. The way that we would balance this out is I would give you money. Basically, you have to give some form of wealth. And what economists call this is the capital account. So they will say, if you have a trade imbalance, you will have to balance out with the capital account. But to be honest, I wouldn't worry about this economics term. I would say you balance this out with flows of wealth. And the reason I want to use the term flows of wealth is because this is a term which I use a lot on the channel. Now, if you have been watching the channel for a long time, you will know that I'm very worried about flows of wealth in our society. I talk a lot about how the working class and the middle class and the government have lost their wealth over time to the super rich who have gotten richer and richer and richer. And really, what is happening here is in some senses a similar concept. China is sending a lot of imports to the USA. USA is not sending so much exports. And as a result, what you are getting is a flow of wealth. And this can take the form of actual literal assets in the USA being owned by China, or more commonly, it's taken the form of debt. And this is really the same here, it's really the same. You've seen the working class lose their assets and going into debt. You've seen the middle class losing assets and going into debt. You've seen the government losing their assets and going into debt. And it's the same thing here. The USA is increasingly in debt to China because it has this trade imbalance. And I was actually thinking about making a video talking about this for a long time, because this idea that I talk about at the bottom of wealth flowing within society, away from the working class, the middle class, the government, to the super rich, is really mirrored in this idea that economists have about trade deficits. And it's interesting that economists are willing to talk about and discuss wealth flowing out of the USA, and in fact make kind of semi-insane policies, as we've seen last week, but they're never talking about wealth flowing away from the working class, away from the middle class, away from the government. But that said, this is an important problem. You know, if wealth is flowing out of the USA, you might see, for example, less factories being built in the USA. Factories instead are being built in China, in Asia. And that might cause problems such as low wages, and that might cause problems such as unemployment in the US. So the first thing I want to say is the idea behind tariffs to reduce the US trade deficit is not necessarily a bad idea. And it's addressing a real problem, which is, you know, not a lot of good quality jobs in the US, low wages in the US, especially for the poor. And we're seeing the same problems in the UK, seeing the same problems in most of Europe, but not all of Europe. So the first thing to say is trade deficits, interesting idea. Wealth is flowing away from the US in the same way it's flowing away from ordinary people. And their plan to address this is to bring tariffs in. And tariffs, it's kind of the obvious solution, right? You want to get rid of some of these imports, and then you want to get rid of the flows of wealth. That's what you're hoping to do. You want to stop importing so much. You want to start producing it domestically. You want to create jobs in your country, and you want to stop wealth flooding out of the country. And their whole plan to do that is to raise tariffs and use those tariffs to reduce income taxes. And as soon as you hear that, you can see immediately, wow, from what in politics or media we would call a comms perspective, a communication perspective, that is such a sexy sounding policy. You can tax foreigners, f***ing foreigners, we all hate foreigners, foreigners are super unpopular nowadays, and you can use it to reduce good old fashioned income tax, we all hate income tax, and give that money back to red, white, and blue blooded real Americans. Fantastic, sexy policy. The problem with that is that tariffs are a regressive tax. And in order to understand this problem, we are going to have to now explain regressive taxation. Okay, so regressive taxation is a commonly understood term in economics. I don't think I've used this term on the channel before, but it's important to understand, especially if you want to understand tariffs. So how do we explain this? So the first thing is, I think the best way to explain it is to start off by explaining what proportional taxation is. So proportional taxation is basically the concept which is actually getting quite popular nowadays in some of the alt-right, the idea of a flat tax, which means everybody pays tax at the exact same rate as a percentage of their income. So let's say we had a flat tax of 20%. If you made £10,000 income, you would pay just £2,000 tax. If you made £1 million income, you would pay £200,000 tax. In every case, you're paying 20%. If you are having more income, you are paying more tax, but your tax as a percentage of your income is staying totally the same. So if we were to put this on a graph where this is your income and this is your tax rate as a percentage of your income, it's going to be just totally a flat line here at 20%. Very, very simple. Proportional taxation. But in general, we don't use proportional taxation. And I think you can see the reason why when you look back at this. So imagine if you're making only £10,000. £10,000 is a very low income. If you're making £10,000, you're probably going to struggle just to pay the bills, just to pay the rent. So if we tax you £2,000, you're probably not going to have that £2,000. If your income is £10,000, you're going to spend all of that money on basic essentials and your disposable income will be nothing. So it's going to be basically impossible to tax poor people at the same rate as rich people, because poor people will literally starve. They will become homeless. They will not be able to pay the bills. So we choose generally in Western societies, including the US, including the UK, to use what we call progressive taxation. And progressive taxation is, we all know, a form of progressive taxation, which is income tax. So income tax in the UK, in the US, in Europe is a progressive tax. What that means is you pay a higher rate the more you earn. So I'm going to round these numbers to make them a little bit simpler. In the UK, up to £12,000, you pay 0%. And this kind of makes sense because even if you're earning £12,000, that is basically not enough to live on in this country. So you don't have any money. We shouldn't be taxing you. It would be absurd. You would starve. So we're not paying any tax up to £12,000. Then from £12,000 up to £50,000, you are paying 20%. I want to make it clear because this is a common misconception. That 20% only applies to the amount above £12,000. So it's not like once you go above £12,000, you're suddenly paying 20% on everything. So that means as your income goes up, your effective tax rate will gradually move away from 0% towards 20% as you go from 12 to 50. So the more you earn, the higher rate you're paying, and it's gradually increasing. Then on amounts of 50, terrible handwriting here, to 125. I got in a lot of trouble at school, my bad handwriting. Then you're paying 40%, and again, you only pay 40% on above that 50, and we have an extra rate for 125 plus, which is 45%. So what this means is because these gradually step up on the only the amounts above, you end up with a graph that looks kind of like this. Here's your income. Here is your tax rate. It's zero until £12,000. Then it starts to go up to like 20%. Then it starts to go up a bit more. It kind of looks like this. You have this kind of stepped graph and it will never go above 45%. Over time, you'll get close to 45%, this kind of. So the higher, that's an extremely messy line. But as you can see, the more income you make, the higher your tax rate. It's never less than zero, obviously. And it never reaches more than 45%. This is a progressive tax rate, and what this means is that the tax burden falls increasingly on the people who can afford to pay it, and you're not charging tax to people who can't afford to pay it, and this means that people don't die of starvation, they don't become homeless, and it means that tax is being paid by richer people who can afford to pay tax. And this is why we have progressive taxation, and progressive taxation is the reason why we have a middle class, and the reason why your kids can go to school in this country, and they can't go to school in a lot of countries in the poor world, because we have progressive taxation. This is a good form of taxation in the opinion of me and most economists. So once you've got progressive taxation and proportional taxation, there is one other form of taxation, which tariffs are, and that is regressive taxation. So let's cover that. Okay, so what is regressive taxation? So in this country, we have a well-known form of regressive taxation, which is the council tax. So council tax, for those who are not in the UK, is basically a tax you pay for living in a home, which everybody, pretty much everybody has to do. And when it was originally introduced, the idea was that more expensive homes paid more, but they've kind of messed about with it over time, and it's ended up in a place where kind of everybody pays like almost a similar amount. That is a simplification, but for the purpose of explaining what regressive taxation is, let's assume that what council tax is everybody pays £2,000 a year. Everybody pays £2,000 a year. Doesn't matter what your income is. So you might see, oh, everybody pays the same. It's fantastic. That's like really, really fair. Everybody pays the same. But the problem is, even if your income is £2,000 a year, you pay £2,000 a year. And even if your income is £2 million a year, you're paying £2,000 a year. So the poorest people in the country are paying 100% of their income, and the richest people in the country are paying, that's going to be 0.1%. So a regressive tax is like this. It taxes the poor at an extremely high rate, and it taxes the rich at an extremely low rate. So if we were to draw that as a graph, here is your income. Your council tax rate is actually, as your income goes to zero, it becomes like infinite. So you can't, it's going to be this kind of classic, what in maths we call a parabolic graph. The poorer you are, the higher your tax rate. And these are bad. This is bad because it means that the tax burden is falling overwhelmingly on the poor and the very poor. So why are tariffs a regressive tax? The answer is, so income tax taxes you on your income, but tariffs are a tax that taxes you on what you buy. So actually we have these kinds of taxes already, which you'll be familiar with. We have in the UK, we have VAT, and we have in the US sales tax. These are consumption taxes instead of income taxes. Now, you might think, well, that's not such a big deal because rich people consume more. Rich people spend more money, so rich people will pay more in consumption taxes. And that is true. The problem is something that we've spoken about a number of times on this channel, which that rich people have a low marginal propensity to consume. I don't know why I always write in capitals on this channel. In real life, I do use lowercase letters. So what this means is, so if we consider poor people, probably shouldn't, people who have a lower income, they don't have much money, it's hard to live, they spend basically everything they get. Whereas if you consider somebody like, I've often used Rishi Sunak as an example, or Elon Musk, somebody who has a passive income of 20, 30 million, 50 million, a billion pounds a year, they can't spend hardly any of that. So the bigger your income, the lower you spend as a proportion of your income. So if we put spending here and income here, somebody who spent all of their income would always be on this straight line. Their income is exactly equal to their spending. But in real life, the richer you get, the less and less of your income you spend. So these lines kind of separate. So what this means is rich people spend a very low percentage of their income. Poor people spend a very high percentage of their income. So if we tax people based on their spending rather than their income, then the richest people will get taxed at the lowest rate. So what this means is tariffs and VAT and sales taxes are all regressive taxes, which means they fall overwhelmingly on the poor. So if your plan is to replace income tax with tariffs or VAT or sales tax, then you are taking money away from the poorest people in your society because they have the highest rate of spending, and you are giving that money to the richest people in your society because they have the highest income. So a shift away from income tax to tariffs is like increasing VAT, it's like increasing sales taxes. It will hurt the poorest, and the way they will see that pain is not money being taken out of their pay packet, which is what people are used to seeing. They will see it in higher prices, otherwise known as inflation. All right, so those are the basic concepts you need to understand what's happened. And now let's talk about the implementation. Okay, so we had been expecting the US government and the Donald Trump government to be doing something on tariffs for some time. And they finally came out with the actual policy on, I believe it was Thursday last week. They brought out this board. Maybe you flash up a picture. You've probably all seen it. They brought out this little cardboard thing that listed the tariffs that they were going to be implementing. And the highest rates were overwhelmingly applied to basically some of the poorest countries in the entire world. The highest rates were on places like Cambodia and Laos in Southeast Asia, which are very poor countries, or places like Vietnam, on places like Lesotho, which is a tiny poor country in South Africa, places like Bangladesh. And the reason why the rates were highest on these countries is because they basically chose to apply the highest rates to the countries which had the biggest trade surpluses with the US. So as we've explained, it's quite normal in a capitalist world for very rich countries to have quite big trade deficits with very poor countries, because poor countries cannot afford to buy almost any American things because America is a very high wage economy internationally, whereas the high wage workers in America can afford to buy a lot from, for example, Cambodia, which is a very poor country. What they called these and what people were expecting was they called these reciprocal tariffs. People were expecting Trump to target primarily countries which had higher tariffs on the US. But instead, they chose to target countries which had very high trade surpluses with the US, which meant targeting basically some of the poorest countries in the entire world, which is kind of insane, basically. You know, the reason, take Cambodia, which is a very poor country with phenomenally high levels of poverty, which has, similarly to other countries like Bangladesh, basically built up an industry of sweatshops, you know, extremely low wage, low working condition factories where people often working in pretty bad conditions make extremely cheap clothes to export to the United States. If you tax these countries, what you are doing is applying a very heavy tax on the goods produced by some of the poorest people in the world who produce very cheap clothes to be consumed by the poorest people in your country in a theoretical attempt to move the worst jobs in the world back to your country. It doesn't make really any sense. And in doing that, if Trump has backed out on these tariffs now, this would have killed people in Cambodia. There is no question about it. The country has basically built up an industry based on exporting to the US, exporting these very cheap clothes to the US. If those factories had been forced to suddenly close down, yeah, there would have been a lot of deaths of poverty, of starvation in Cambodia. It would have caused, not just Cambodia, in Laos, in Bangladesh, it would have caused really phenomenal humanitarian economic crises in those countries. But even if you ignore what it would do to the poor in some of the poorest parts of the world, what you gain from it is driving up the costs of the cheapest clothes in your country, which are an essential good for the poorest people in your country, in a theoretical attempt to bring sweatshops back to the USA. It didn't make any sense. And you're also targeting countries here, like Laos, like Cambodia, which are right next to China. Laos shares a border with China. Cambodia is very close. Basically, you are attacking the key potential strategic allies who are immediately next to your key long-term political, military, economic, strategic rival in China, in what appears to be an attempt just to drive people both outside and inside your country, the poorest people outside and inside your country, into poverty. It was, whatever you think of tariffs, and I don't think tariffs are necessarily a bad policy, the implementation was totally insane, I think. And this started a long discussion, and I've been having this discussion quite a lot with people in the last week or so. I thought that what you saw there was low competence implementation. And a lot of people don't like to believe that. A lot of people like to believe that the US government is high competence, and I would like to believe that as well. So some people were saying, basically, I can't think, and nobody can think of an economic rationale for attacking Cambodia economically and for attacking Bangladesh economically and attacking, you know, they even raised tariffs significantly on Taiwan and Japan and South Korea, who again, these guys have been for a long period of time US's key strategic allies against China in the region. But at least in some of those cases, you can say, you know, Japan does have high value added, like good job manufacturing, which you might want to move back to the US. I couldn't really see any logic at all in attacking Cambodia and Laos. And I was saying to people, I think this shows basically low competence. And people would say, well, this is the argument against that, was that, well, actually, we know it's stupid to attack Cambodia and Laos, but the reason they're doing that is because if you attack unbelievably aggressively, like if these tariffs had gone in, I don't think you can overestimate the scale of the economic disaster it would have caused in Cambodia and Laos. If you attack these extremely poor and weak countries aggressively, you will force them to make immediate concessions, and it provides a great sort of short-term media wins for Donald Trump, which allows him to sort of look strong. So you crush the poorest in the world, they immediately give up, and then that gives you leverage against China. But then if your plan was to relocate industry back into the US. How do you achieve that by bringing in pretend tariffs, which you're only using to score points in the media, and you're immediately going to cancel? You know, if I am a businessman and I'm thinking about building a factory, and the US brings in tariffs, which I know that they're going to cancel within a week, I'm not going to build a factory. And that guy doesn't. So there's that. To be honest, I think that there was quite a lot of cope, really, which is people seeing this insane thing happen and not wanting to believe that it comes from low competence. It's difficult for me not to be reminded of what happened in the Liz Truss situation. And what this really made me think of, and it's the next thing I want to introduce, is basically questions about theories of change. How do you improve the economy? And what this reminded me of was, so I went on a podcast with Christian Gurumurthy, who is a very well-known news presenter here in the UK, and we discussed the things I always discuss, which are the collapse of the economy and the need to raise tax on the rich. And Christian Gurumurthy asked me a question which I get asked a lot, which is, if you were Chancellor, what would you do? And I get asked this question quite a lot. And I got quite frustrated because I've been asked it a lot. And I said, listen, if I was Chancellor, there'd be nothing I could do. You don't fix this just by one guy becoming Chancellor, developing a whole economic tax policy in a room by himself without any oversight, without any discussion, and suddenly applying it on the world. What I'm trying to do here is not be the guy who redesigns the global tax policy by myself whilst making YouTube videos. I am trying to raise awareness of the fact that if you do not deal with growing wealth inequality by changing the tax system, you will see really dramatic collapses in living standards. And what I want to do is open that conversation up and have really an army of ordinary people behind me forcing the rich to have that conversation, so we can discuss the best way to fix the tax system. But the way that I constantly get asked, what would you do if you were Chancellor? What would you do if you were Chancellor? Reveals to me quite an immature, quite a childish approach a lot of people, even in the media, seem to have towards politics and economics, which is the way to fix the economic system is to get one guy or one small group of people and ask them to totally rewrite the economic rules without any broader discussion. When I see things like what Liz Truss did a couple of years ago and what the Trump administration have done now, it really looks to me as if that's what they think fixing an economy looks like. And I want to be clear, people like Liz Truss and people like the Trump administration, they are correct in identifying that there are massive problems in the economic system, bigger and bigger percentages of rich economies like the US, like Europe, like the UK are falling into poverty and we need change. But both of these groups of people, Liz Truss and now Donald Trump, seem to think that the way to fix the economy is to like lock a couple of geeks in a room for a couple of weeks and ask them to rewrite the entire economic system all by themselves, and then to suddenly foist some crazy, poorly implemented plan on the entire world without any discussion. And I think it's a phenomenally immature way to do politics and economics. I mean, God knows how many Cambodians would have died just to make it so that poor Americans can't afford trainers. And I'm not saying that tariffs are a bad policy, but when are we going to wake up to the fact that we have serious economic problems and we need to have a discussion about this as a society? Why does it have to keep being crazy people with crazy hair bringing up crazy policies that they seem to have like made up themselves a week earlier, you know, in a little meeting with four people? It drives me mad. Okay, so what happened after Donald Trump's mood board tried to explode Cambodia? Financial markets went totally insane. Stock markets started to sell off really, really aggressively. And the reason for this is obvious. You've got companies like Nike or like Apple that build their products, or yeah, they build their products basically in poorer countries, Apple builds a lot of phones in China, but Nike and a lot of cheap clothing manufacturers build their clothes in Bangladesh or Cambodia or Vietnam. And suddenly, the cost of an iPhone was going to like nearly double in the US, or the cost of cheap clothes would be increasing by 50-60%. And you know, if you're selling cheap clothes to poorer Americans, they can't afford to pay 50-60%. And what would have happened is the sales of things like iPhones, which might still happen because the China tariffs are still on, would have collapsed. The sales of clothing would have collapsed. And you know, you could have seen the bankruptcy of companies like Nike. It's crazy to say, but it is possible. Financial markets went totally, totally insane. They were freaking out. And I traded through the COVID crisis at home on my laptop, but I traded in the 2008 crisis as a professional trader. In a lot of ways, markets to me felt crazier last week than they did during the beginning of COVID or the beginning of 2008. And I think the reason for that was, even in 2008 was really serious. You know, we were really talking about like a really serious potential global economic depression. We knew that at the very least, the governments wanted to avoid a global economic depression. But in the last week, we didn't really know that. I don't think any of us really knew what the US government wanted. It seemed at points like they wanted to make the stock market crash. It seemed at points like they wanted to crash the global economy. And it was crazy. Markets were crazy. Stock markets collapsed. And to be honest, you know what? Again, what you see here again is another kind of legitimate problem recognized, but addressed in a mad way, which is, I think you do, and I speak about this a lot, I think you do want assets like housing, like stocks, to be cheaper for ordinary people. I think you want wages, you want assets to be cheaper relative to wages. But the way to do that, the sensible way to do that, is to change your distribution and drive wages up over time. I don't think anybody wants to make Nike go bankrupt. I don't think anybody wants to destroy the pensions of pensioners. But last week we didn't know for sure whether that was what the government wanted, what the US government wanted. And markets were freaking out. Stock markets were collapsing. A lot of rich people were buying. I was buying, kind of on a reflex, to be honest, more than anything else. Trump seemed happy with that. Trump seems happy with the markets collapsing. On Monday, there was a rumor from some random dickhead called Financial Juice. I shouldn't say that. He might be a nice guy. From a random guy called Financial Juice, said that they're going to pause the tariffs. Stock markets jumped up immediately. The White House immediately denied it. Stock markets jumped like up and down like 10% in about 15 minutes. The White House denied it. They said, we're not going to do any pauses. To be honest, I thought there's no way, at the very least, the attacks on Southeast Asia and then the poorest countries in the world are totally not in the interest of anyone. I thought they had to turn back on that, but they were adamant they were not going to turn back on that. And then we had, I think it was Tuesday evening. Yeah, we started to see government bonds sell off, especially in the US. What this means is, so this is interesting, right? And this is something I talk about a lot, right? So I was an interest rate trader. In general, when the economy is very weak, you expect central banks to cut interest rates. So expect interest rates to fall. It should make borrowing costs cheaper. It should make borrowing costs cheaper for the government. But what was happening in the last week was quite interesting, because if you raise tariffs, that will increase prices significantly in the US. So it's going to increase inflation significantly in the US, which puts the US government in a situation of, it puts the US Federal Reserve, the central bank in the US, in a situation of, well, maybe we shouldn't cut interest rates because inflation is really, really high. And then you're facing this potential like double whammy of inflation going up, well, a triple whammy of inflation going up. You're potentially causing a global economic depression and interest rates going up at the same time. Still, the US government seemed not to care, which meant that traders were increasingly worrying that maybe they were intentionally going to blow the economy up. Maybe they were planning not to pay the debt back. Really, like, lots of questions are being asked. The things that they were doing seemed so crazy that basically people were talking about maybe they're going to confiscate other countries' gold. Maybe they're not going to pay the debt back. A lot of the debt is owned by America to China. Maybe they're intentionally not going to pay the debt back. So people started to sell US government bonds, you know, I don't have any US government bonds, but if I had them, I probably would have sold them. I wouldn't want to be owed money by the US government now. Like, would you? So basically, people started to sell US government bonds, which means the US government is an enormous amount of debt. If that had have continued, it could have meant, if it had gotten out of control, similarly to the Liz Truss situation, it could have led to the relatively short-term bankruptcy of the US government. And that would have made 2008 look like a walk in the park. I'm laughing, but this is what happened. This is what happened last week. And thank fuck they decided to back down, because honestly, this could have gone anywhere. But then the way they back, even the way they backed down. Oh my God. We were filming this on Thursday. Trump tweeted on Wednesday on fucking Truth Social, today is a great day to buy stocks. And then a couple hours later, he reverses the tariffs, backs down on everything he did, except for the tariffs on China, which have gone up. And obviously, stock markets went through the roof. So basically, like, Donald Trump is like manipulating markets on social media. Yeah, basically, it was mad times. Mad times for everyone. Lots of people would have lost a lot of money. Richer people like me, who had the money to reach out, would have been buying stocks throughout. I didn't buy stocks on the back of Trump's tweet because I didn't see it. If I'd have seen it, I probably f***ing would have. This is the last concept which I'm going to introduce in this video before I'm going to take some questions from Jack, because I'm sure I can't cover everything because this is totally insane. It's a concept which I used to like during trading, final concept of the video, called bias against inaction, which is, there's this theory, I don't know if it's true, that in football, soccer, for my American viewers, during a penalty shootout, the statistically best thing for a goalie to do is to stay in the middle. Because if the penalty goes in the corner, you can't save it anyway. But if it's near the middle, you'll save it by staying in the middle. But goalies very rarely stay in the middle because it looks stupid. And basically, whenever there's like a mad crisis, traders, and I don't think just traders, I'm talking from back in my time when I was a trader, they feel that they have to do something, because if there's a crisis and you don't do anything, everybody thinks you're an idiot. But the truth is, when something crazy happens, like what happened last week, you don't know, you don't understand in the first moment what has happened. And it doesn't make sense to take some dramatic action or to respond in some dramatic way when something crazy happens and you don't know what's happened. And whenever I was a trader and there was a big crisis, occasionally in the initial move, you lose money. And people would ask me, what are you going to do? And I always say, I'm not going to do anything until I understand what the fuck's happening. And I think this is a good example, because this is an ongoing situation. Tariffs are still there on China. Technically, the tariffs on the rest of the world are supposed to be reintroduced in 90 days, although I strongly suspect that won't happen, because I don't think Trump and his team had expected the potentially cataclysmic results which they saw. But at the end of the day, all of this mad shit show and most financial markets are pretty much back the way they were last week, because he turned around and cancelled a lot of the things that he did. And I think this really emphasizes a lot of what I've been saying since the beginning with Trump, which is you need, most of the time, you're best off not listening to what he says, because a lot of what he says is designed to stress you out, to panic you and cause chaos and to destabilize you. Don't be panicked into action. Stay calm, stay cool, have sensible investments. Don't do anything crazy. Be aware that tariffs are an aggressive tax. Tariffs are not necessarily a bad tax, but if they're brought in without any support from the poor, then it will impoverish the poor. If you are an American and you are not a rich American, you don't need to be opposed to tariffs, but you need to make sure that they are not being used to benefit only the richest. I think what you are seeing here is the rich Americans trying to squeeze out rich foreigners at the expense of both poor Americans and poor foreigners. Protect your interests, stand together. Listen, the rich are protecting the rich. They're sending out tweets on Truth Social, helping each other to manipulate markets. Rich people bought a lot of stocks in the last week. I bought a lot of stocks. Trump supporters bought a lot of stocks. They don't buy them from nowhere. Somebody's being squeezed out. That's probably you. Don't panic. Stand together. I'm f***ing that good, but I'll do my best to help keep you informed with what's going on. And before we finish, we're going to take some questions from Jack. You got any questions?
Well, I was just wondering what's going to happen next, because is this a big knock of confidence?
Yes, sorry, we should talk about that. Yeah, so what's going to happen next? Even though a lot of the tariffs have been cancelled, first of all, the tariff on China is still there. They might reach a deal on that. Assuming they don't reach a deal on that, China's a f***ing massive country, exports a lot to the US. You will see certain things, you know, iPhones, but not just iPhones, like China makes a lot of stuff. You will see those prices increase in the US. You will. It won't be nearly as much as what would have happened if they'd kept the tariffs on everyone. Certain prices will increase on the US, for sure. And as I've said, tariffs are a regressive tax. So, like, for me, as a rich person, if the price of an iPhone doubles, like, I didn't even really notice that, you know what I mean? But it's not just iPhones, cheaper phones. You know, a phone is an essential. You know, it's manufactured goods. They make basically everything, you know, manufactured goods, pretty much your furniture, your fridge, your oven, you know what I mean? Like, how much in this room was probably made in China? The microwave, almost everything, basically. So, like, yeah, the cost of manufactured goods will go up in America. I should say, like, it's the position of, like, the Europe or the UK is quite interesting, because in theory, if the US alone does tariffs, prices in the US go up. They import less from China, and China has suddenly loads of goods it needs to export. You could see prices of things go down in the UK and Europe, which could be good in a weird way for your average British or European. But of course, European and British governments will have to protect. If it's the case of these are products which will directly compete with existing industries in the UK, then our government will probably have to put its own tariffs on, because if you suddenly get tons of cheap imports, it could see British factories shutting down. But the truth is, Britain doesn't have that many factories anymore. It's probably not in direct competition with China in certain products. So in theory, you could see things get cheaper in the UK, and you could see interest rates fall. One thing that was really worrying, I'm almost hesitant to mention it, was you saw suddenly interest rates in specifically the UK really rise, and government bond rates really rise. And of course, we've seen that increase in government borrowing costs driving austerity. That was really f***ing worrying. A lot of people are saying, don't worry about it. Markets were just freaking out. But as a British person, I'm worried about it. They might back down. Listen, I'm not against tariffs. But this is not a way to do tariffs. This is not a way to do policy, you know. This just feels like four or five crazy guys in a room made this policy. Like, if we want to have... We can have a discussion about tax. It's the same as when I talk about taxing the rich, you know. I'm not trying to be that crazy guy in the room making the whole policy. What I want is to have a societal discussion about a problem and come to a place about fixing it. The second thing is, who the f*** is going to build a factory in the US now? Realistically. Like, would you build a factory in the US? I would be worried that they'll f***ing just, like, expropriate the factory. These guys seem crazy. But the third thing is, and you know, I'm not like a defense expert, but like, what does Japan do now? What do you do if you're Japan? Japan, like, has been like basically like a really unbelievably tight US ally for whatever, 70 years now, 80 years. You know, the US army is massively based in Japan. And then the US turns around and basically like seriously threatens to fucking destroy your economy. What the f*** are you going to do? Japan, okay, I'm not telling Japan what to do. It looks to me like they have no option but to rearm. That's crazy, right? But, you know, Japan, South Korea, I mean, Taiwan probably has no defense if the US doesn't back it. But, like, you know, okay, so you're telling Japan to rearm. You're telling South Korea to rearm. You're telling the whole of Southeast Asia to ally with China. Like, what if you're Cambodia? What do you do if you're Cambodia? The consequences in Cambodia, you know, and I know Cambodia is a small, faraway country, but that would have been unbelievable. And not, you know, Cambodia and Laos, Bangladesh, Vietnam. These guys who have built economies completely fundamentally attached to the US have no choice but to reorient their economies to be with China now. This is insane. This is like, you are trying to create, if you tell Japan to rearm, you tell Europe to rearm, you are telling the world, I want a world war. And at the same time, you are telling some key strategic allies to not be on your side in that war. Like, it's... You know what? This is a weird analogy, right? But you know what it makes me think of? Do you remember Fyre Festival? Yeah. Fyre Festival, for those who don't know, is this American festival where they had this really sick marketing campaign with loads of models. They're like, we're going to have this unbelievable festival on an island. The marketing campaign was so good. They spent all of their time working on the marketing campaign. Nobody actually figured out what to do with the fucking festival. So all of these people bought these tickets. They turned up. There was no fucking festival. It kind of feels like that because raising tariffs to cut income tax is fucking sexy comms. It's sexy fucking comms. Like, that sounds great. But you look at the policy, you're trying to... The results of the policy are to crush the poor in Cambodia, to crush the poor in America, to create a world war that you're going to lose. It's insane policy, but it's sexy comms. And I just feel like we're turning the whole world into Fyre Festival, which is just like, I don't give a fuck, because this guy's only going to be president for 4 years. He just wants to have sexy comms. And I hope, you know, and I have these arguments all the time saying I think it's incompetence. And I'm not, and I just want to be clear, I don't think this incompetence is just Trump, you know, and I don't think it's even just the US administration. I think all of the smart guys are fucking traders at investment banks, and the governments are run by idiots, you know. And this is why I'm on YouTube, because I'm the people who are going to get hurt. Donald Trump's not going to get hurt. I bet Donald Trump made a ton of money last week. I bet you, and not just him, his whole team. You know, this is ordinary working Americans. This is ordinary working Americans. Ordinary working Europeans. And this is why I've got a YouTube that talks to ordinary people. So I know I just said that what the consequences are, and maybe you know I'm sitting here in the immediate aftermath of this, and maybe in 2-3 weeks' time things look calmer. I'll be on a fucking beach, hopefully. It's worrying. But I think, to finish, we need to let people know, I'm going to take a bit of time off soon because I'm fucking knackered. I'm going to keep doing this in the long run. We're going to provide people the information they need, the understanding that they need. What we are doing here is building and growing unbelievably quickly. I'm not saying I'm going to fucking save the world, but what that does show is that there is demand in the UK, in America, in Europe, Australia, Canada. The Canadians keep messaging me, why you never say Canada? Across the world, we see the demographics. People across the world want this, want something different. We're going to try building it. But it's not just going to be me. It's not just going to be us. There is demand for something different, something not insane, something not destabilizing. And it doesn't mean, you know, that you can't reduce the trade balance. It doesn't mean you can't protect American working people. But this, what is happening now, is not protecting anyone. It's not protecting anyone. And the book's been number one for 10 weeks. So we finished on some good news. But that's it, I think. We'll end it there. Sorry for another stressful video. I think we're only going to... I am f***ing knackered. And the Daily Mail keeps knocking on my mum's house. And it's stressing me out. So probably another 2 weeks, I'll go on holiday. But we're still here. Don't go mad. Stay cool, educate your friends, send this video to your mum, to your community. Let's build something better. Doesn't have to be f***ing mental all the time. Good luck.